And there's a trip blue inside of me that keeps stopping me, touching you, wanting you, loving you. Paranoia, the destroyer. Paranoia, the destroyer.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi, led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, as the Republic military takes over the temple bombing case, Ahsoka finds herself at odds with Admiral Tarkin, a.k.a. Farkin! There will be Farkin rising to power! A different kind of clones that we're not used to seeing. And Anakin and Ahsoka are starting to face the inevitable future they can't avoid. We're talking about the Jedi who knew too much this week. How you doing, Krius?
Good. We got something to talk about now.
Yeah.
Something good to talk about.
Yeah, like, listeners, right before we got started, like, we were, like, talking about the episode, and they were like, wait, why are we talking about the episode?
We're doing the show already.
Though I'm really excited Chris got to watch one of my favorite things in the world, because I'm a big fan of the Game Grumps, and I think it's episode 17 of their Mario Maker run.
I have a joke for you.
Dan! So what it is that...
funny joke!
So what it is that... I don't know if it's episode 17, but the title of the episode is called Yoda Jokes. So if you look up Game Grumps Mario Maker Yoda Jokes, they're playing a level of Mario Maker where people can make their own Mario levels, and they're playing one that is, like, incredibly hard.
Savage.
Savagely hard. And, like, Dan is just getting really, really frustrated, and Aaron tells him about his idea of, like, when Yoda retires from the Force, how he would become a stand-up comedian. And so for the next 13 minutes, as Dan is getting more and more progressively upset at this level, Aaron would just be like, hey, Dan! What is it, Yoda? I got a funny joke for you!
Funny joke!
God damn it, Yoda. And I was so happy because I love the Game Grumps, but I know it's not like everybody's thing. And I was like, I get to share this with Chris.
Well, you're watching it and you're seeing how, you know, it's like Super Mario Brothers, but it's Super Mario Brothers on crack. So you see, like, they have to spend many, many lives figuring out the complex series of moves you got to do to get from one thing to another. And it just keeps going. So, like, they complete it, and then they get to another thing, and then they see they have to do some other almost impossible thing next. And so, you know, it's just repeated starting over and starting over again. And there's just this one point at the beginning where you can tell in that first... You know, you got to do that first thing in the beginning or else you're going to screw up everything after it. And that's when he would just pop in with, like,
they did it.
And it's just like, it's, you know, it's just like when people torture each other playing video games. It was hilarious. They made little cartoons to go along with it, which were funny. But it's funnier when you're watching the gameplay because you're seeing the guy, you know, the guy will crack up and die or be,
he's,
you know,
getting more and more upset at dying repeatedly.
Right, right. And at the same time, he's being amused by Yoda, but it's just hilarious. Yeah.
Yeah. Game Grumps are so big that people do animations for their work, and Game Grumps animated are like just people go all out for those, and they're so good. I love the Game Grumps ever since fucking Pokemon, the official Pokemon channel, took off Pokemon VGC from other people uploading that shit, which made me really salty because I used to watch that every night. Not happy about that. I started watching just Game Grumps every night. I'm about to complete their Breath of the Wild series, but I'm on the last episode, and I'm just like, do I want to watch a 10-minute episode of Mario Maker, or do I want to watch the 30-minute finale of Breath of the Wild? So I've been just working through their 150 episodes of Mario Maker. But every episode's only like 10 to 15 minutes long, so they're not that fun. But they're just hilarious because they're just playing these like ridiculously, insanely hard levels, and they're just like cursing their friends that made them. So, if you're a fan, if you've never watched the Game Grumps, look up Game Grumps Mario Maker Yoda jokes. Yeah. And it's just 17 minutes of fun. Yoda comes in about the third minute, I think it is, and the next 14 minutes is just Aaron torturing Dan with Yoda jokes.
Because they're bad Star Wars.
He won't tell
a joke
for like 2 minutes, and then he'll be like, hey, Dan, god damn it, what, Yoda? God damn it. I think my favorite still is, where does Vader shop? At the Darth Maul. That's my favorite.
So bad. There was one that they got. There was one that he got, and they were just like, it's this. And he was just like,
you need to work on your delivery. So, yeah, go check it out. I was just very excited that I get to share something I love so much with Chris, because we don't always like the same things, even though we like a lot of the same things. Oh my god, I'm so excited to talk about this episode. Can we please get started?
Let's go.
Yes! I'm so excited. I forgot how fucking good this episode was. Alright, so. The Jedi who knew too much is the 100th, I can't talk. I'm so excited.
This
I need
is
to calm
the
120th
down. Episode of Jay Guys and Jedi, too.
The 120th episode of Jay Guys and Jedi. But it's the 106th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars, and it aired on February 16th, 2013. Hold on, I need a burp. I'm better now. It was written by Charles Murray and directed by Danny Keller. I'm sorry, guys.
That stays in.
Yep. Some extra information for you. The episode was named for the 1934 Alfred Hitchcock film The Man Who Knew Too Much. The episode contains many references to the 1993 film The Fugitive, which stars Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones. One of the references includes Ahsoka Tano jumping from the water pipe to escape capture. The Republic base was designed specifically to foreshadow the rise of the Galactic Empire. In addition, it was located near the Venator staging area that was seen in Revenge of the Sith. The Jedi bear Sophie references at the memorial service. The Jedi that bear Sophie references at the memorial service is Tutso Mara, whom she studied lightsaber techniques. Mara was one of the 6 Jedi that was killed in the explosion last episode. In the Republic military prison, there was a monitor set up showing other prisoners being held. They are Amir Watt Tambor, who was captured at the end of season 1, Poggle the Lesser, captured in season 2. And General Worm Loathsome, captured in the Clone Wars movies. The interaction between Tarkin and Ahsoka in her prison cell was purposely blocked out in a manner very similar to Tarkin and Princess Leia aboard the Death Star in Episode 4. The monument at the center of the Republic Military Base Plaza is an enormous slab of Geonosian rock that lists the names of the clone troopers that fell in action in the First Battle of Geonosis, the First Battle of the Clone Wars. The first clone trooper with the mastiff is named Sergeant Hound, and his little lizard dog thing is named Grizzer.
Grizzer.
I just like that his name is Hound, and he's one of the hound-toting stormtroopers. I was like, that's on the nose. All right, I'm about to read a lot. Ready? This video is fucking 7 minutes long. In the behind-the-scenes video this week, Dave Filoni and Steven Stanton, the voice actor for Farkin, discusses the rise of the military. Dave Filoni says, Tarkin really represents the military establishment. By that, I mean what you see in the Empire, the overwhelming power and arm of the military that we're really familiar with in the original trilogies. Right now, that arm is being run by the Jedi. It's always been a plan since Mace Windu argued with the Chancellor that the Jedi want to remove themselves from power of the military. In order to do this, the Chancellor has men set up, like Tarkin, men like Ozzel, and even Yularen, to take over the military from the Jedi. we got a bit of that. We got a little bit of sense of that transition back in the Citadel arc with Tarkin. And then we get to see how that's really evolved this time around when we see him. We see this grand facility for the military that Tarkin has built. We see a massive staging area. We see the clones of this facility answering more to Tarkin and less to Anakin. All this shows you that there is a giant mechanism in place that's very hard for the Jedi to counter. So wrapped up in the emotional drama of Ahsoka being accused of a crime, we have this underlying symbolism of the military that has grown up almost off-screen while we've been rooting for it in the form of all the clone soldiers that we love so much. We see that they are the weapon of power for a group of men that may or may not have the best intentions of the Republic in mind. With Tarkin, you always wonder how much he knows about Palpatine's plan to incriminate the Jedi. I don't think that Tarkin really cares, Jedi or not. He just wants power for himself. If he gets the Jedi out of the way, then he has tremendously more power. I think that's what's at stake for Tarkin. I don't think he cares whether it's Jedi or Sith. He even says to Vader that the Jedi are out of the universe and Vader's all that's left of their religion in Episode 4. So I think he's a lot more pragmatic and political and utmost interested in having power, which is the theme for most of the villains in Star Wars. And then Stephen Stanton comes in and talks about his character of Tarkin and says, "It's not that Tarkin came in and he was originally a good guy, and the next episode he's a bad guy. But there's a definite change where we get to find out that what his motivations are. Why is Tarkin doing the things that he's doing? Is it his ambition? Is it something that happened to him and made him this way? That's not what we know. And that is what we hope to find out more and more as these episodes go along. As an actor, there has to be some kind of change, not just in Tarkin's behavior, but also in his voice, too. You have to be able to hear that he's becoming a different person." And then Dave Filoni comes back and talks. I can't read. Dave Filoni talked with me, Stephen Stanton, extensively about what's happening in this arc. So I had a pretty good idea of what Tarkin was trying to do, what his motivations were. He started becoming that guy that people don't like too much. No kidding. We can kind of get an idea of why this is happening. And then Dave Filoni comes back and says, "Ahsoka on the Run is a pretty awesome sequence. I don't think our show has ever felt more like Star Wars until the clones are chasing Ahsoka Tano. It just looks like Star Wars. Instead of Jedi slicing up battle droids, we finally have something that looks like stormtroopers chasing down a Jedi. That is something I have always pictured of what the Clone Wars was actually going to be about. If you really look at it in a lot of ways with Anakin leading them, it's Darth Vader hunting down a Jedi Knight. The moment at the end with Anakin and Ahsoka in the pipe is one of my favorites. It's obviously a nod to The Fugitive. There's something about that moment, this concept of that leap of faith where Ahsoka believes in herself and her abilities, where she must overcome this dilemma. She says to Anakin, 'You have to trust me now.' It's such a pivotal moment for her character because she leaps into the beyond. It's one of my favorite moments. It's something I drew in one of the very first story meetings we had for this season with George. I drew a scene of Ahsoka leaping off the camera, leaping off as the camera looks up at her, and I wanted that shot in this episode. I think Ashley Eckstein and Matt Lantern's acting in that scene is the best the two of them have ever done." Woo!
Well,
lots of Empire. Dun, 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 dun. It is time for Yoda to talk.
Some of best acting Yoda's ever done.
I just imagine you as a tiny Darth Vader. marching along with your tiny lightsaber and breathing in your swamp gas and your little ventilator, and it'd be like, that's how you breathe.
I would picture Yoda in like more like a scuba tank, you know.
Oh,
except filled with water.
With his little water wings.
Yeah. He doesn't like that kind of talk.
he came out and he ran the moment I started talking about
water wings.
Water wings. I could go for some wings right now, even though I just ate dinner. Maybe some frog legs. Actually, I've never had frog legs. I have no idea what they taste like.
Like chicken, they taste.
Do they really?
That's what Yoda's heard.
You never eaten a frog leg? Never picked up like a Lady Yoda's leg and just gave it a little lick?
What happens on Dagobah stays on Dagobah.
I just imagine you making out with actual frogs.
Refer to last statement.
Alright, Yoda, what's the platitude for this week?
Ahem. Courage begins by trusting oneself in bed.
No, I can see that.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
It makes perfect sense. You have to... It takes a lot of courage to be like, okay, I'm going to get naked in front of this person.
Yeah, I don't know. That's more like confidence than trust. I don't. Yeah, trusting yourself is just like, going to do a good job.
Don't put drinks in me. I don't trust myself when that happens. We've heard that before on this show. It's not a good day. Well, it's a good day for all of you, not for me when I listen back later and I go, oh, God,
not
what
when the
did
video
I
comes
say?
Out, right. Don't what hand her a I mic. Say? Yeah. I was just editing the episode today where we were talking about your adventures on Hamilton Karaoke.
No. Where apparently I was speaking in tongues.
That's what I hear.
Oh,
unfortunately,
Lord.
Nobody pulled out their phone for that one.
Thank God.
You have either the best friends or terrible friends.
I have great friends because apparently one of my friends kept putting water in my hand and I was like, magic water just keeps appearing. She's like, it's not magic water, Hope. It's me.
Just drink
I'm like,
it.
No. It's magic water, Megan. It's not you. Apparently. That's what I was told. All right, Act 1.
Act 1. Let's get into this. I can't wait to get to this episode.
Oh, me too. Which is why the very little bit of banter. Because we were just like, let's talk about it. All right, Act 1. Last week, there was a bombing at the Jedi Temple that killed a bunch of clones, civilians, and some Jedi. Anakin and Ahsoka investigated the bombing and found a woman named Leta Termal, an anti-war protester, had set up her husband to make the bomb and made him into the bomb, too, and he went boom. She was brought into custody for the crime. The overlying doubt of that episode was, what if a Jedi was actually behind the bombing? On to this week. All of our Jedi bros are attending a funeral for their fallen Jedi bros who died in the explosion. Ahsoka is standing with her friend, Barriss Offee, who fought with her way, 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 way back in Season 2 at the Battle of Geonosis. And just to refresh everybody's memory in case you forgot, the two of them infiltrated a Geonosian factory, blew it up, got stuck in a tank, almost died, got into a ship infested with brain worms, and had to fight off some zombie clones. Barriss is upset because one of the fallen Jedi had helped her in training. Yoda gives a great nice little speech and all the Jedi are buried. Afterwards, Farkin is strolling along with Anakin, Ahsoka, and Barriss because he's a dick full of dicks with a dick face and chodes for brains. Ahsoka wants to know what will happen to Leta, the bomber. Tarkin says that Leta is being moved to a military prison. Ahsoka is pretty peeved because this was an attack on the Jedi, but Tarkin says that clones and civilians died too. It's a Senate matter now. And Anakin backs up his future Imperial bro. Ahsoka wants her to be tried at the temple, but even Barriss is standing by with Tarkin and Anakin on this one, and she also says that nothing will ever change. Tarkin informs them that Palpatine is working to remove the Jedi from the military missions because they are not soldiers, but peacekeepers. Ahsoka doesn't like being removed from military duties and hopes Palpatine knows what he's doing. Barriss excuses herself, but Anakin says it's been a hard day all around and lets Ahsoka go with Barriss. He gets on the elevator with Farkin and they have an Imperial bro moment together. Ahsoka catches up with Barriss and says that it's hard to not let her emotions turn into attachments and pain. And Barriss then asks a very dangerous Jedi question. Is it right for the Jedi to ignore their emotions? Ahsoka goes the Jedi route, saying, with enough work, it's possible to move past emotions and feelings. Anakin calls Ahsoka to meet him in the war room because of a Separatist attack. Ahsoka tells Barriss that Leta will pay for what she did, and hurries off to meet Anakin. In the war room, Obi-Wan is briefing the other Jedi on the attack, but Farkin butts in with his dumb fuck face, saying that the bomber prisoner, Leta, wants to talk to Ahsoka and no one else. And everyone else is like, that's weird, but okay, get going, Snips. and Ahsoka goes into her Vader impression and says that she will report back with whatever she finds out. What did you think of Act 1?
It was a nice setup.
Yeah!
It's sowing doubt and paranoia from every angle. I thought that Yoda's speech, though, was pretty low energy.
Well, they were talking about people who died.
Yeah, it was. But he just seemed like he was just sort of, like, going through a lot of his greatest Yoda luminous being quotes and stuff, you know. Sort of doing his Yoda routine, you know. What do I got next? Funeral? Okay.
Well, you know, I was about to say, I mean, they're at wartime. I mean, how many Jedi have they buried so far?
Yeah, I don't know if Yoda does this all the time, but I mean, maybe it's special because it was at the Jedi Temple, so it's more, you know, I don't know. But it just seemed like he was kind of like, yeah, blah, 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 luminous beings, blah, blah, blah. Anakin saying revenge is not the Jedi way is pretty funny.
Yeah, that is pretty damn funny.
And it's funny, too, because it's sort of, I think it's kind of a reference to Return of the Jedi, too, which was going to be Revenge of the Jedi. And then George Lucas decided, he's like, yes, revenge is not the Jedi way. We need to change the title.
Yeah, two for two.
Yeah, it's a burp day today.
Happy burp day!
You can tell the weather's changed. It's gone from blowing my nose to burping. I'll take burping any day.
Yeah, me too.
That's
now you're making me think about my nose, and I'm like, is my nose running? Ah.
My only other note is there's some real nice music in this one. They're definitely, you know, just building the whole feel of the Empire, you know, in the music and in the look of everything and in the storyline. It's great.
I was talking to Chris beforehand. Actually, when Ahsoka's catching up with Barriss, there's like kind of like almost like a jaunty like do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do tune. And I was just like, they haven't really ever used that kind of music before, especially for Ahsoka. But there's still kind of like it's not in a minor key, but it's just close enough that there's still kind of a bit of a sinisterness to it, which is just really nice for the entire episode.
Yeah, well, there isn't much happy music after that, so it's like, you know, it goes dark after that. But that's all the notes I got for part one.
I have so many notes for this episode. So my first note is, with Anakin backing up Tarkin about Leta being moved, it's kind of a nice little bit of a callback to the Citadel arc when, like, him and Tarkin were talking back then.
Yeah.
It has definitely that feel to it of, like, these two have been, like, possibly in communications and, like, keeping tabs.
Oh, definitely. No, or not even in communication. They might not even have had to, like, remain in communication. They could have been, on missions together or working together on missions that we just haven't seen. But they've definitely interacted more than since the Citadel arc, you can tell.
Yeah, I mean, we know that they were in the droid arc for one episode. I mean, right. We never really saw them interact, but I mean, I would agree with that, too. There's probably been, like, off-screen missions that these two have been on, and I could see Anakin just being like, Tarkin, I want to work with Tarkin! Yeah, I love that guy. Everyone's like, what? And Tarkin's like, yes, he's quite pleasant in the face as well. I would like to work with him.
Let me work with the farm boy again.
I love farm boys. They're great. Ha ha ha.
Hate that girl he hangs around with.
She can stay behind. I don't want the
She's
girl.
She's just in the way.
Though it was kind of like a
I
little
wish she'd
like,
go away.
when Anakin stepped on the elevator and he was like, oh, she's still so young. And Tarkin was like, yep.
Such a like, silly, immature girl.
But it was kind of like a kind of a, I don't really want to say a nice moment, but it was kind of like a nice, like, little, like, human thing to say. Like, they didn't have to show us that tiny scene of Anakin.
Yeah, it didn't seem nice to me. It seemed, like, kind of, like, cynical.
That's why nice is not the right word for it. I guess it was a lived-in moment. Like, they didn't have to show us that. They could have went straight to Ahsoka and Barriss at that. But they gave us that, like, little, like, lived-in-the-world moment. Like, Anakin gets on, he's just like, oh, my Padawan. He's like, I know, bro. They didn't have to show us that. No, so right. It was nice that they showed us it. Not that it was a nice moment, but it was a lived-in moment of this world. Okay, this one's a little bit of a... Most of my notes are long on this one. Let me set up, and then I'll talk about it. To bring up the conversation from way, way, way back ago on the Geonosis arc, we talked about how Ahsoka had been experiencing PTSD and that she was trained as a Padawan in wartime. So all her experience so far as a Jedi is mostly wartime. So that's why I found it so interesting when she's disagreeing with Farkin and Palpatine about removing Jedi from military matters. But at the same time, that's all she knows. She doesn't really know how to be a Jedi outside of military matters because that's all of her training as a Padawan.
PTSD, I don't know if sometimes people with PTSD sometimes go back into combat because at least with PTSD in combat, your PTSD is on point. You know what I mean? It's mm-hmm. like... It has a reason for being there because you really are in combat and you have to be on the alert and freak out at loud noises and stuff. Whereas when you're in regular life where you have no threat to you, it's just torture, you know? So
yeah.
So it could actually be part of her PTSD that she's, you know, hesitant to separate herself from war.
You know, I think we mentioned it back then during the Geonosis arc. I don't remember because it was like a year and a half ago or 2 years ago. But I think we even talked about how, like, we didn't think Ahsoka even knows how to be a Jedi outside of a war. Like, I don't think she even knows what that even means.
No, but also I think there's also a level where she's worried about people like Ahsoka and Tarkin becoming... the people in charge rather than her and Anakin and Obi-Wan and the Jedi Council and stuff, you know?
Which is a very valid fear.
Right, yeah. Oh, it totally is. I'm sure as a Jedi, she has a little bit of intuition towards those guys anyway.
Yeah. But my follow-up note to this, I just want to point out that something Barriss was saying, and she pretty much said the exact same thing that she said back during the Geonosis arc. Because back then she called the Jedi peacekeepers and she was questioning why the Jedi were in the war in the first place. And it was Ahsoka that argued back with her during that time that shit gets done when Jedi are in charge. So that goes along with your note of, yeah, Ahsoka's probably worried about letting go of that power. I mean, look at her freaking master. It's Anakin. Like, he's the king of, like, not letting go of power. So she's probably picked up a lot of that, too, I mean. So, I mean, I think she really is not... I don't think she knows what the world looks like when the Jedi aren't running things. And I think that... right there is scary to her because it's an unknown thing that she's never experienced.
See, I wonder if back since the Geonosis arc, you know, saying that the Jedi got stuff done, and the Jedi do get stuff done in sort of the battle level of it, like Jedi, you pull them into the battle and they win the battle.
But I mean, look how much we were talking about think about that during the Saul Guerrero arc when we kept saying Ahsoka could be doing so much right now.
Yeah, and the Jedi could go in and you know, defeat a planet, but it doesn't seem to be doing any good in the wider scale of things, you know? So it's questionable how much the Jedi are getting done, or if what they're getting done is towards the best for everybody anyway. Spoiler, no, it isn't.
I mean, on that note, I mean, like, maybe it is for the best that the Jedi take a backseat role. Because, yeah. I mean, they are becoming so disconnected and so corrupt. I mean, that's what the previous episode was all about, was the people are getting pissed off at the Jedi, which is the whole point of Clone Wars
also,
in the first place.
In Palpatine's scope, you sort of have to have this step, too, where you start disconnecting the Jedi. So that way, when Episode 3 comes and he says, the Jedi are trying to take power, they have this to reference back to and see, like, the Jedi didn't like being phased out of the war. You know, this episode is so heavy on the setup for the turning of, you know, in Order 66 and stuff in Episode 3. You know, it's all there's a lot of, we don't see Palpatine at all in this episode, but there's a lot of Palpatine's chips, you know, falling into place right here.
Yeah, I mean, even last episode, too, we got to see how the people are reacting to the Jedi as well, and they're not happy with the war either.
Yeah, okay, we're starting to see a lot of the things that we saw in the prequels and in the Clone Wars just sort of come into fruition right now. And yeah. It's not pretty.
No. I mean, I have notes later on about how the clones are reacting to all this. So, yeah. I mean, this is a layered episode. That's why I love it so much. My next note is, I got a little bit of a Rebels and Last Jedi vibe from Barriss asking, is it right for the Jedi to ignore their emotions? And what made me really think about that is what makes Kanan and Ezra so unique is that they embrace their attachments and their emotions, and they use those to make them even better, even though that they're Jedi, because, you know, Ezra's power is his empathy. Like, he can connect to animals and he can connect to people. And Kanan is in love with Hera, and they clearly love each other, and he uses that to help drive him to help protect her. And even Ahsoka in Rebels, once she comes back in Rebels, she's a lot like this too. So I think she maybe had taken some of Barriss's words to heart. And then we see that Luke is sort of doing the same thing in the original trilogy. He ignores traditional Jedi training to go, say, like, Leia, Han, and Chewie, or he goes to save Vader from himself. And Luke even hints about that emotions are not bad in The Last Jedi while he's training Rey. And it's very much like the kind of thing that Jedi come out of, like, post-Order 66, like these kind of new kind of Jedi, like Luke and Ezra and Kanan and Rey and stuff. It's these, like, new post-Order 66 Jedi. And honestly, I think these Jedi, like these four guys and Grey Jedi Ahsoka later on, are truly the best kind of Jedi. They're the most balanced that we have ever seen in Star Wars, because they're not one or the other. They're kind of embracing both sides of the Force.
I think they're more products. Pardon me. I shouldn't say more products, but they're partially products of Obi-Wan and Yoda too, who are, I think, the most, you know, of the Jedi we know in the prequels, Yoda and Obi-Wan are the ones that are most like those guys.
But
and a lot of it has
like
to do
Yoda,
because they were their trainer, they had trained them. But even then,
like, Yoda was like, Luke, you don't need to go save them from Cloud City. And he's like, well, bye, Felicia, I'm going.
Right. But You know, who knows if Yoda was doing a double, you know, please don't throw me in that briar patch. Whatever you do, you should not go to Cloud City or whatever. You know, mm-hmm. Who knows how, you know, he's not as much of a manipulator as Palpatine, but he also seems to have a clearer view on the big picture. So, But I don't know. Yoda and Obi-Wan just seemed more, like, Obi-Wan seemed more easygoing and Yoda seemed more skewed towards the mystical. And that's sort of, those two aspects seem to go together well. And we could throw Qui-Gon in there too, especially as being a big influence on Obi-Wan. You know, Qui-Gon, like, right off in episode one brings up, like, the, you know, the living force and that sort of thing.
You know, I kind of feel like Yoda got more mystical after he died and he was a force ghost. Because, like, when he was alive, that's when he was teaching, like, Luke, like, you don't need attachments, you need to let your feelings go and stuff like that. But once he became a force ghost, I feel like that's when he was like, oh, man, cosmic force, I can see forever. And that's when he was like, yes, Luke, burn down the tree. Burn it. It's for the best.
I think when he did that, he was doing that more for Luke's benefit, because he knew Rey had the books anyway. And he was just, he was letting Luke, like, you know. And you know what? If Luke hadn't let go of the books, he might not have been able to let himself sacrifice himself at the end of the movie. Spoiler. You know, do his force projection at the end, because he wouldn't want to use up all his energy because he's protecting the books there, you know? So,
yeah.
That, you know, who knows? Yoda's always, when Yoda shows up, you always know something's happening with the big picture, I think. And, yeah. And I think there's a reason that's why Obi-Wan and Yoda actually, like, made it out of Order 66 and into, you know, as influential Jedi into the future.
Yeah.
And Kanan.
Oh. I love Kanan. little note, Ahsoka is like, even though we just talked about how important emotions and feelings are to Jedi, Ahsoka needs to check her mouth a little bit when she talks about Leta, because I know she's upset, but man, she's just blabbing about how angry she is to Tarkin.
Yeah, she has no idea, though. That's the thing, is she has no, you know, she just has no idea that, you know, somebody would set her up. You never do until somebody does.
Yeah.
And that's part about being set up. She's probably, you know, probably all of that. That's why Tarkin's very suspicious in that they're, you know, very suspicious in this episode, because he's, you know, he's the one like, well, she wants to talk to, you know, she'll only talk to you, you know, so it's hard to say. I have some conspiracy theories I'll talk about more towards the end of the show, but
I will not confirm or deny any
right,
of them.
Right. So
you can,
I have no idea. I'm in virgin territory for me, but I do have some theories.
I would like to hear your theories, but I will not confirm or deny them. I'll just go, okay. But I want to hear what you think.
I have two working theories as to what's going on in this episode.
Gotcha. The last one I have for Act 1, it's very brief, but when Obi-Wan is telling the Council of the Separatist attack, you know, Mace was like, oh, it's so far out of our way. And Obi-Wan's like, well, we have to avoid these neutral systems. And I wonder if that's a little bit of a leftover from the previous arc on Mandalore, because Mandalore was the head of the neutral systems in the war, but now they have a civil war going on between themselves with Maul and, well, Maul's out of the picture now, but they have a civil war going on, and Obi-Wan was on that planet and kind of helped kind of like kickstart that civil war. So I wonder if that's just a, like a lasting repercussion that the Jedi now have to stay like super out of the way of these planets now because of what Obi-Wan did in the civil war that's going on.
Yeah, that's very possible.
Mm-hmm. But that's all I have for Act 1. Did you have anything else?
No, let's get into Act 2. Act 2 is a juicy one.
I wasn't quite sure where to split it, so I moved around the final paragraph a couple times because I wasn't sure. So far, we'll see.
It looks like you're starting out. I had the one with the commercials on it, so it looks like you went right to the same place I did.
Yeah, pretty much the difference between Act 2 and Act 3 was Ahsoka's running around inside, and then Act 3, Ahsoka's running around outside. That was the breaking point I had, so. Act 2. At the military prison, Ahsoka meets with Clone Commander Fox, who's in charge, and he thanks her for capturing Leta. These clones aren't as friendly and as lovable as our 501st bros that we've come to love. And they make Ahsoka leave her lightsabers and comlink at the desk. They lead her to Leta's prison cell. And Leta says that if she ever needed help, Ahsoka was the one to contact. Ahsoka asks for a minute of privacy, and the clones leave the women alone. Leta admits that feeding her husband explosive nanodroids was not her idea. Someone told her to do it. Someone is out to get her, and she wants Ahsoka to know the truth to protect her. She says it was, in fact, a Jedi who showed her how to make the bomb, and is behind the attack all along. Leta says that many citizens, and Jedi, as Anakin pointed out last episode, think that the Jedi have become warmongers and aren't who they used to be. The Jedi wanted to make a statement that the Jedi are killing people, so, you know, by blowing up and killing people and Jedi in the bombing. And before Leta can say the Jedi's name, someone starts to force choke her. Commander Fox sees on camera Leta getting choked, and the clones rush in there. Leta falls to the floor dead, and Ahsoka is freaking out, especially since she was the only Jedi in the room, and they place Ahsoka under arrest for Leta's murder. Farkin arrives with his dumb fuckboy face to interrogate Ahsoka. He has a recording of Ahsoka in the room with Leta. When Ahsoka held up her hand to try and help Leta, it straight up looks like she's strangling the woman with the Force. Tarkin starts using all of the Ahsoka Act 1 outbursts against her because she was pretty pissed that the military got Leta and not the Jedi to put her up for trial. And Farkin's all smug like, but if someone else did kill her, wouldn't you sense them with your Jedi voodoo magic? And Ahsoka has no answer for him. And Anakin shows up at the prison like, damn it, I taught her too much to be like me. God damn it, she acts like me all the time now, and she's killing people now? Jeez. and Commander Fox refuses to let Anakin in. Anakin threatens him, and Fox has clones surround Anakin. These guys don't work for the Jedi. They work for Tarkin. And Anakin has no choice but to leave. Back in her cell, Ahsoka notices that a keycard has been left outside on the other side of the ray shield of her door. She thinks Anakin left it for her, so she uses the Force to open the door She uses the Force to open the door up and get out. She gets to the front desk, and all the clones have been knocked out, which does not look good for her at all. Her lightsabers and comlinks are waiting for her, too. Fox shows up, sees her, and sounds the alarm. Ahsoka makes a run for it and sprints through the hallways, getting chased by clone troopers. Fox catches up with her and pursues. Everywhere Ahsoka goes, she keeps finding more clones knocked out. But this time, they've been killed by lightsabers. Fox sees the clones and gives the order to shoot to kill Ahsoka. And in comes in her dads. Rex and Anakin arrive at the prison and tell Fox to take back that order. And Fox is like, fuck you guys, she's killing clone troopers. And Rex is like, let me tell you something about my space daughter. She is nice and gentle and tough and strong, and we make friendship bracelets, but she is not a murderer. And if you hurt my space daughter, you will answer to me. And Anakin calls out in the hallways that Ahsoka needs to stop running. She shouts back that she's been set up. Even though Anakin believes her, no one else will. With Ahsoka running, Anakin has no choice. He probably gives Rex the hardest order he's ever given him. And Rex puts in the call that Ahsoka is armed and dangerous, and everyone should be on alert to capture her. What'd you think about two and the feeling?
It's not good to see Rex throw Ahsoka under the bus.
Oh, God, yeah.
And Farkin is in full Farkin effect.
Yeah.
What is it with Ahsoka that the Sleazo guys want to touch her face all the time? It's pretty creepy.
It is pretty creepy. Yeah, but I mean, it was what he did to Leia. Like, he grabbed Leia's chin on the Death Star. I mean, he did the exact same thing to her.
Well, it makes you very suspicious that Palpatine force-choked her because of Farkin's light of like, oh, why couldn't you detect it? And and you know, one of the things is that Jedi have a real hard time.
Is that your conspiracy theory?
That's
number one
of them. That's one of them. Is the Jedi okay. She can't sense the dark machinations of the Sith.
So okay.
My second conspiracy theory in it is that there were some sort of as the husband, they talked to her, putting the nanobots on the husband that exploded. Maybe they put nanobots on her neck that levitate. And somebody, pardon me, came in and, you know, somehow got nanobots on her that somehow choked her out, you know?
Okay.
Those are my two plots as to what's going on here.
Chris.
Both of which have Farkin.
Chris.
Behind them, yes.
You know it's Darth Jar Jar. Cue the music!
Oh.
Misa killing people now! Yeah!
Misa choke out the nice lady.
I'm going to force choke ya! You better be playing that music in the background.
You guys don't even have to say it anymore.
I'm going to set you up. Misa's going to take over soon. Farkin's going to love Misa all the time. Misa can be a farm boy. And Tarkin's like, I'm straight now, bye.
Yeah, that would make Tarkin straight.
Oh, man.
But my only other note is this is where the plot's getting very Hitchcockian. It's getting very... Hitchcock loved those movies of people who are getting set up and going into a world of paranoia and you know, accused of a crime that they did not commit.
And it was nice because you said last episode wasn't very Hitchcockian, even though it had a Hitchcock title.
Right, this one definitely is. This one thematically is really Hitchcockian.
I'm really happy. I'm using my brand new coaster. I got it at 221 PCon. Yay. It has a Pokemon on it. I love Pokemon. Anyway.
That's all I got for Act 2.
It's a Jolteon, my favorite of the evolutions. I love Jolteons. I want one. All right, so my notes. Here we go. let's talk about clones for half a second. I really like seeing the clones that are under the military arm, opposed to our normal clones that we see under the Jedi, because Commander Fox and his men are a lot more like Tarkin. They are no nonsense, no mercy, and they just speak with like a really harsh tone. So it's like a really cool foil to the clones that we're so used to seeing, because we're so used to seeing like the jokesters like Fives or Jesse, or like the little softies like Rex and Kix. But these clones do not fuck around.
Well, yeah, those guys are also in the context of everybody's fighting together, so they're all family. These guys are more like prison guards or something. And I noticed they're all bathed in red light and with red streaks up them too. So they just the way they shoot them, they look more angular and red, and they just look meaner too.
Yeah,
it's really well done.
I mean, wasn't pretty much like the Empire, like their main color outside of like black and white and gray was red?
Was red, yeah.
Yeah. And like same thing with like Palpatine's like personal guards. They're like, they wear the red robes and stuff. I mean, these guys are like Tarkin's bros, and like these are his men, and they are not the nice clones that we're used to seeing. As the clones are taking Ahsoka through the prison, there's a borderline Imperial March playing in the background. And it's not exactly the Imperial March, but it's pretty damn close.
It's on the way. It's evolving.
Yeah, because it'd be like, bum, 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 bum. Like, it was like half an Imperial March, and it was just that feeling of just like, oh.
Yeah, here it comes.
God, even the prison is set up like the Empire. Because, like, we've at least seen a lot of Imperial prisons between, like, Rebels in the original trilogy. Because we've seen, like, Leia and Ezra and Kanan Sabine, like, get held in Imperial prisons. And it's the exact same setup. Like, it's the exact same layout. So it's just a really cool nod to be like, yep, we're moving our designs now into the Imperial area, yep. Era. It's coming. Look at the prisons. It's like Rebels. Oh, God. I got chills when Tarkin was walking down the hallway with the clone troopers, because that was the most Imperial moment of Clone Wars so far. I mean, it just looks Star Wars of just Tarkin walking with stormtroopers. I just got chills when I saw that scene.
Yep. And did they know they were canceled by this? Well, they'd already written in this. They were definitely knew that they were coming.
They did not know. They didn't know that they were canceled at this point.
They were definitely knew that, though, that they were building towards episode 3, because this is definitely taking it in directions that, you know, can't go much farther than episode 3. So, like,
that's not true, because they wanted to take it 8 seasons. 8 seasons was going to be post Order 66.
That would have been pretty intense.
Yeah. Because the final season was going to be post-Order 66, so, yeah, like what happened to everybody, like Ahsoka and Rex and stuff, and Battle of Mandalore, which I would have, oh, please finish the Clone Wars. At least give us a movie of the Battle of Mandalore, please. That's the one I want to see the most, like, more than the Cad Bane Boba Fett shootout, more than Rex and R2 on a mission together. I want to see the goddamn Battle of Mandalore. Like, the Siege of Mandalore, that's what I want to see more than anything else, is just that battle. Please, at least give us a movie of that. I will watch the fuck out of that movie. So I started thinking about what Stephen Stanton was saying in the behind-the-scenes video thing about how Tarkin was starting to change at this point in the series. And he said it's not like Tarkin was changing overnight suddenly, and it's been a slow change since the Citadel arc. And I started thinking about it, and most people, like you and me, have clearly seen A New Hope. And so most people know Tarkin first and foremost from that. Like, we know who Tarkin is, we've seen like Rogue One, and we saw him in that and stuff like that too. But something we've also talked about before is like, what would this show look like if somebody had never seen the original trilogy? And they started at the beginning in chronological order, and they started with episode 1, and then episode 2, and then they watched Clone Wars in chronological order with no later knowledge of the original trilogy. would Tarkin changing against the Jedi actually seem justifiable at this point based on how corrupt the Jedi are getting?
Yeah, because we've had Krell before this.
Yeah.
And so, and Tarkin looks and seems creepy. So they would be like, yeah, this guy's... And since we know Tarkin, even though he's evolving, I'm pretty sure Tarkin as a person has probably, since he was a little kid, been a schemer, you know? So we know he's a schemer. We know he's one of those people who likes to position himself, you know, in on the escalator moving up. So... yeah, I think, and the way, you know, the way they're telling the story, they're bringing in his character as that, and it's they are bringing in the character also to work if somebody, say, hasn't seen the original trilogy. It would be really fun if you'd watched it that way, and then you get to episode 4 and go like, oh my god, I know that guy, and it would be weird because you'd be seeing him in real life, but it would obviously be him.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'm too old to have that experience.
Yeah. But yeah, I just started thinking about that, and I was like, you know, if somebody was watching this in chronological order, yeah, Tarkin would actually be pretty damn justified to be doing what he's doing right now.
Yeah.
Which is weird to say that. But, I mean, that just shows how good the writing is. I mean, if you were watching just this in order, you'd be like, yeah, the Jedi are starting to be really big fuck-ups. They kind of are destroying themselves, so yeah, maybe they shouldn't have that much power. So it's weird to think about, but that just shows how good the writing is, because they're justifying why it was so easy for Order 66 to happen in Episode 3, and it's wonderful. It's
yeah,
just
it's
so
retroactively
good.
Making the prequels better.
Yeah. God, okay. But me and my best friend cannot talk about the prequels, because I always argue that the Clone Wars make the prequels much better. And her argument is that they are bad movies and they will always be bad movies. And yes, having extra information helps, but it doesn't make them better movies. I don't know how I feel about that argument.
It makes them more enjoyable movies, I'll say that. It adds to the experience of watching the movies. And it works for me because they're both visual versions of Star Wars, and I think that's George Lucas planned on doing that. You know, he seemed to have a real plan with Clone Wars and executed it, you know? And so, yeah, it improves the experience for me, so I guess that's all that counts, really, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely improves it for me, too. I mean, yeah, they're still rough movies, and they're not great movies, but, like, there's something about, like, going into Order 66, and I can name almost every clone and know their backstory with their Jedi to make it more emotional, because I'm just like, Bly, don't shoot Isla Sakura. You guys are on the Lermans together, and you guys are bros. Like, it makes it just so much more painful, and in like, knowing how Anakin got to that point where he's like, you know, I don't trust the Jedi anymore. It's not a sudden turn. It was 6 seasons worth of work to make his turn believable.
The stuff that got filled in during Clone Wars is also, you know, you can only make Star Wars movies about 2 hours long, you know? So you have to serve the main storyline, and you can only sort of gloss on to where the main storyline in the Clone Wars intersect for the movies, because, you know, you're covering your main character Anakin's story arc, so it's like that, and it's not just Anakin, it's Anakin and Obi-Wan and Palpatine and all that. So, and it's the grand story arc, which is Palpatine's plan. So, you know, it would have been great in the movies if they could have filled in all the blanks in Clone Wars, but it would have been impossible to do it, because Clone Wars has had hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours to do it, and they've been able to stick it inside of, you know, adventure stories and other things and build it up and stuff. It's just something, if people can complain about it, but it's just something sort of new, you know, in the way that they're dealing with it, telling a story. And in that, I think, you know, I think the Clone Wars definitely improved the story. You know, they added shading and coloring to the story instead of just like showing you, just giving you little things that happened, even though it does do that, and having callbacks to characters and things in the other movies, it actually does shade in the nuance of how the Clone Wars happened, you know? That's why I'm sort of looking forward to the Resistance cartoon, because that will shade in probably how the First Order started, which is glossed over in The Force Awakens and is to the detriment of the movie, because you don't really, you're like, so the, you know, you're not really sure if the First Order is just not the new name for the Empire and they never lost in the first place, you know, you don't really get that from the movie. Mm-hmm. And we've gotten it since, cause it's been in the books and stuff, and it's made its way out, and comics have talked about it and stuff, but you know, having it in a visual medium is what makes it, in my own Star Wars canon, canonical. So, yeah, I'm not going to complain or argue that it improves it, because it noticeably does for me, you know. And if it does it for somebody else, then that's, you know, that's their experience of it.
Actually, I want to throw this question out to our listeners. So, guys, go to the Two True Freaks Facebook page for this episode and leave a comment. Do you think that the Clone Wars makes the prequels better? Or do you think that even with this extra information of the Clone Wars, is the prequel still bad movies? So leave us a comment. I would love to hear what all you guys have to say about this, because me and my best friend cannot talk prequels, because we will fight. We can't talk about it anymore. It's just one of those things where we were just like, you know what? Let it lay. We don't talk about the prequels. But I would love to hear what you guys think. Like, so does Clone Wars actually improve the movies, or are they still bad movies, but the extra information is cool? So just let us know what you think. My next note, I actually really like when Fox won't let Anakin in, because a bit of that Jedi privilege is getting thrown back to his face, and he is not used to that.
No, and at the same time, Anakin knows that he could just go into that cell and take her out if he wanted to, and so does Fox, but they have to, Anakin's got to be good, you know? There's a tension there.
Yeah. This is kind of a part one note. I'm going to come back to this note later. But I do, in Act 3, but I do have to kind of wonder why Ahsoka didn't just stay in her cell, because she knows she's innocent, she knows it's another Jedi. Why escape and make her look worse in the situation?
Because she doesn't trust anybody at this point. She's freaking out and paranoid. I don't even 100% think that she and Anakin trust each other 100% at this point, because something's happening and they know it. So I think she just is so freaked out, she's like, if I stay, you know, you don't know what whoever's pulling the string wants you to do. They don't know. So she's probably thinking it's better to go off on her own. That way she's free and they, you know, they won't have her, and maybe she can figure out what's going on out in the wild. She's Anakin's Padawan. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I'm just going to go ahead and do my follow-up note now, because now that I'm looking at it, it's not relevant for Act 3. Because, like, why didn't Ahsoka stay in her cell? At the same time, I don't blame her. If I was 16, accused of murder that I didn't do, and think that no one's going to trust me, I would panic and run, too.
Mm-hmm. She can only trust herself right now, so.
And I was also thinking about it more, because at the beginning, she thought Anakin left her the key card. But I think the moment she saw all the knocked out clones, she realized it was not Anakin.
Right.
And that's when she really started freaking out. So, like, yeah, I think that was the moment when she was like, oh, cool, Anakin left me this thing. And she walks outside and she's just
going,
like,
this is a good thing. And then she was like, oh, this is not a good thing.
Yeah, she was like, oh, this is bad. Run away. You know, I'm actually really happy they involved Rex in this story, because A, Rex hasn't been in the season a lot, and that hurts my feelings. But on one hand, I like that they showed that the foil between the clones under the Jedi and the clones under Farkin, like I was saying. But there's also the side of Rex that he knows Ahsoka. They're friends. He would be there to help his friend. There's no reason for him not to be there to help his friends. And I think if Obi-Wan wasn't off in the battle, off in the distance, like we saw at the beginning of the episode, I bet Obi-Wan would be here too.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm glad they threw Rex in there, because it just adds another layer of, you know, somebody she's really close with that she has to be at odds with. And it just ramps up the paranoia and tension of this episode.
Yeah. While we're talking about Rex, I'll go to my other Rex note on this, because the only other note I have is a Farkin note. There is some really nice, subtle voice acting from Dee Bradley Baker in this act as Rex.
He's got to.
Yeah, and when Rex puts in the call that Ahsoka is armed and dangerous, he sounds official, but there's just the tiniest bit of sadness and heaviness in his voice that Rex doesn't normally have. And it's really nice acting.
Yeah, but I think they purposely did that. I think they purposely didn't want to show his face. They wanted to make him, you know, they wanted to play that like they're friends, but he's still got the faceless clone mask on, you know, that
you're looking at my other note. You're looking at my other note right under it.
Oh, ha
ha. So for my other note, as I said in the crawl arc, I wish they had unmasked Rex.
I had to literally scroll down, and I'm just like, oh, okay. Yeah, I'm glad they didn't, though.
I kind of wish they did, because I wish we got to see the emotions on his face going on, or at least, like, during that scene, like, his mask was off. And
that
then
would
like
break the tension. No, they want that. They want that tension. They want you not to know. They want him to be, you know, this is Rex, her friend, and now he's a faceless clone, you know?
See, I would have rather have it like him not wearing his mask and holding it while he's talking to Fox, and when he has to get the order, then he puts on
then
the mask.
Then he has to put it back on. That would have been dramatic, too, yeah.
That would have been, like, super symbolic. Like, you know, like, he's angry at Wolf, and he's talking to him. He's like, what are you doing? I know her. Like, she wouldn't do this. But when he has to give that order, he just, like, puts the mask back on.
Puts the mask on, yeah.
And he has to be Captain Rex, not Ahsoka's friend Rex. I actually would have liked that a lot more. Just because it's Rex's beautiful face. And we haven't seen it. The only time we've seen Rex's beautiful face this season, he was in that stupid-ass outfit on Onderon. He wore that dumb-ass outfit that I made fun of him for. Ugh. The only other note I have was, didn't Farkin say that this place has cameras? Are they not recording who's knocking out everybody? And
I thought the same thing. Yeah, that makes me even more suspicious of Farkin.
Yeah, because he was like, there's cameras all over this place.
Oh, yeah, and when he showed Ahsoka the video, he goes, and for some reason, there's no
sound.
Audio on this. No.
Oh, I'm Tarkin.
See, I don't know, but I think they might be trying too hard to make him look suspicious, so I don't know if he's actually behind this or just being himself, you know?
Okay. I'm not saying anything.
Yeah, you can't say nothing.
I can't say nothing. I know who did it.
You don't know nothing. Right? You don't know nothing, okay?
I actually remember what I said last episode. I planted a hint for you. I don't know if you remember that. I planted a hint in my notes.
Oh.
Yeah, in the last episode I did. I told you that, so. But that's all I have for Act 2. That's actually where the majority of my notes were, even though I still have a couple big ones left in Act 3. Act 3?
All right, you want to wrap this sucker up?
Oh, it's a good-ass episode up? No, I love it. It's so good. I don't want to wrap it up yet. All right, Act 3. Hold on. Okay, now I can do Act 3. 3 for 3. Happy birthday. What if this episode came out on National Burp Day? Is there a National Burp Day?
I have to assume there probably is.
They have
a
National
Burp Day. There's an official
Day.
National Burp Day, but somebody's probably proclaimed it at some point.
There's a World Burping Federation?
I'm sure there's a Flatulence Day, too.
the World Bourbon Federation, with headquarters in Geneva, Switzerland, oversees duration and decibel belching competitions in all G8 nations, as well as Brazil, India, Spain, Singapore, and the territory of Cocos Island. Oh, man. So I don't see a national birthday, but there is a World Burping Federation, the more you know. You can use that in team trivia if it ever comes up. All right, Act 3. The entire base is on alert, searching for Ahsoka. She is using all of her Jedi sneaking through air vents training skills to the max to avoid the clone troopers. She escapes out to the Clone Trooper Memorial Plaza and is creeping around a group of clones with their search lizard dog things. Commander Fox spots her, and the clones chase her across the plaza. Turret guns blow up her ship before she can get to it, and Ahsoka must continue on foot. Ahsoka follows, with Fox commanding that Anakin is following with and commands Fox to set their weapon to stun. He wants He wants Ahsoka alive because they have to have feelings together, and Hope can't read today. She makes it to the industrial pipeline, and it's an all-out chase. Clones are running and shooting at her, and they're showing up in gunships and shooting at her, and she's dodging all like a mad woman using all of her Jedi parkouring skills. And Anakin gives the command that no one shoot to kill her. For the love of God, she has to make it to Rebels and beyond, everybody, so no one kill her. She's important. And he wants them to try and box her in. A blast from a gunship makes Ahsoka lose one of her lightsabers as the clones start to move in. They get her surrounded, and Ahsoka is trapped. Anakin and Rex, the best dads in the world, arrive in time to see Ahsoka jump into one of the pipes, cut her way in, and vanish. Clones flood into the pipe to hunt her down. Rex and Anakin are quickly in after them. Ahsoka makes a quick turn to lose them, but Anakin senses her and follows. She makes it to a dead end, where there is a huge drop with nothing but air and spaceships and nothing below her for so many Coruscant levels. Anakin catches up, demanding what she's doing. Ahsoka is pissed because Anakin didn't even try to help her, and he argues that the clones wouldn't let him see her, but she says that he could have made it happen if he really wanted to be there. And he says that it would have made her look even more guilty, and she begs him to believe her that she's not guilty. And he says they need to prove her innocence by going back, and she doesn't know who to trust anymore. And she refuses to go with him, and Anakin goes into his commanding dad voice, ordering her to put down her lightsabers. And she tells him he needs to trust her now. And she jumps out of the pipe just as Rex, Fox, and the other clones arrive. And she lands on a ship below and rides it away into next week's episode. The end. I'm acting the shit out of this, and you're just like, oh, what'd you have to think of Act 3?
I love the stun weapons.
Yeah.
We got to see it happen again in Last Jedi, but you don't often get to see a full-out battle on stun, you know? So it was just visually neat because they're circles instead of laser bolts. And then
always been circles.
Yeah, yeah.
Because in A New Hope, when they stun Leia, it's a circle.
Right, but somebody usually just goes, bleh, and stunned somebody. This was like stormtroopers going blah, 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 like blowing smoke rings, you know, and she's like
slicing through them,
yeah,
which is so cool.
It was really cool. It's just visually really neat.
And one like hits the guardrail and it disintegrates.
Yeah, it just sort of disperses. I love the space bloodhounds. They're really cool.
Although, I have a note about that. You know those clone troopers are so in love with their little lizard dog things.
Oh,
and they're
sure,
just like,
they always are. They always are. They're always
like
their best friends.
You're such a good boy.
Here's the thing, though. The one time the thing was actually catching a scent, he's like, hey, there's nothing here, boy. It's like, no, you should listen to him. That's what their job is. Lizard dog's doing his thing, you know? You should look up, maybe.
Yeah.
It's a Jedi. You look up in every direction. They could be anywhere. They could be underneath you. They could be inside you. They're in your head, man.
Ugh.
There's just a palpable Palpatine pall over the whole thing, and I didn't even write that down. I just came up with that right now.
How
you
Palpatine?
You can sense Palpatine.
A Palpatine?
The Palpatine's palpable plan.
Paul.
Casts a pall
over the,
over the Padawan. You don't see him. You don't get any sort of, you know, overt reference to him, but it's just sort of there. It's like you can feel his, even if he's not directly doing the stuff in this, it's still part of the results of his plan and his machinations. It's really cool. And this was the most fugitive part of the, this is when I was like, oh, they're doing the fugitive here. Cause as soon as they were running through the pipes, I'm like, oh, is she going to like have to jump out of a pipe because Anakin catches up with her? And I'm like, oh yeah. So, okay. It's Harrison Ford and Tommy Lee Jones.
I've never seen The Fugitive.
Yeah, there's a scene, you know, there's the exact same scene with Tommy Lee Jones and Harrison Ford in The Fugitive, which is a remake of a television show.
Give me a rundown of what The Fugitive is actually about, because I've never seen it.
From what I remember, I saw it when it came out, but the basic storyline is it's a doctor, and he comes home, and his wife's been murdered. And he sees a one-armed man. We didn't see if there was a one-armed man in this, we'd know who did it. But he sees a one-armed man running off, but it's all set up to look like he killed his wife. And the whole TV show and the movie were just him being pursued while he tried to prove his innocence and find the one-armed man. It was very similar to The Hulk, or The Hulk was very similar to it since The Fugitive came first. But it was
a second, because when you said it, I thought I went to the clown movie. The Hulk was very similar to it.
It's not like it at all, except it takes place in pipes for a scene, and that's only in the movie. I don't think they did that in the TV show. I don't think that scene was in the TV show. But that's all I got for part three. Part two is my favorite part of all of this. Part two was the part I thought that like contained the meat of this episode. Part three was just sort of like the end chase. It was very exciting, but there wasn't as much meat to this one, you know?
Yeah. I have a little bit of meat.
All right. Serve it up. Fry it up.
My first is a little bit of a petty note, which is the chase scene is so good. It's just a great move. It's just so good. And then you have, like, the storm rolling in the background, and then it starts raining. Oh, it's just all so nice. I just love how much Rex and Anakin have trust in Ahsoka, especially Anakin, because he knows that Ahsoka would never hurt a clone, and he's just fighting so hard to save her from this terrible situation, but it's just completely out of his hands. Like he'll give an order, and then Fox will be like, nope, shoot to kill. And he's like, no, don't shoot to kill! Stop it! And you can just tell, like, he's not used to not being in charge, and Anakin's almost floundering and to a point.
No, his hair, he's sweaty and his hair's mussed up. Yeah, he's not in control of the situation. You know, that's not good for a guy like Anakin.
No. So it's just, the only thing I think he feels like he can still control is Ahsoka. And even then, she's not listening to him. And, like, The scene I think of is, like, when they have her cornered, right when she jumps for the pipe, he yells, Ahsoka! And then you, like, see his face. Like, I don't think he knows what to do in that moment. Because it's just not something Anakin ever has to deal with, is not having control.
Yeah, no, that's not how it's worked up till now.
I know. So, my God, this is the scariest I think we've ever seen the clones so far in Clone Wars. Like, there's almost a feeling that some of them are actually enjoying this chase. Like, one of them were like, ha-ha, we have you now, Jedi! And he sounds so happy about it. And so, like, we always talk about how the clones probably feel about the Jedi leadership and just, like, being bred to go into battle and die. So do you think that there's actually a bit of a sense of revenge for them that they get to chase down a Jedi and then they're actually...
I don't know if it's even as much that, or it's just they're like their design nature is like, you know, when you're on their side, they're loyal and they're your friends. But you know, even without Order 66, psychologically, this just works in with groups and you know in groups that you know it's yeah. Once she becomes an enemy, another, you know, they're just like, get her, you know, and they're programmed to be, you know, warriors. So they jump into it. And, you know, they're also, you know, I mean, but since it's not Order 66, you got guys like Rex who are just like, okay, let's, you know, I got to catch her. Those are my orders. But, you know, I don't think she's guilty and I'll try to help her out as much as I can. But at the same time, he's like, I got to follow my orders, you know? So
yeah,
I think it's just their cloneness.
Yeah.
That's the thing. They're great to have on your side, but when things start to turn, not so great.
Which is what I think was what Dave Filoni was talking about, like seeing the clones under the military. And because there's definitely just a sense of like they will follow orders before following their trust of you, I guess. Like
they're
orders
made to follow orders. That's their being, you know?
It makes sense for someone like Fox, because, like, Commander Fox, he doesn't know Ahsoka. He's a prison guard. Like, he's never fought with her, so she's just an escaped prisoner. But that's why it kind of, like, extra hurts, like, when Rex has to give that order that she's armed and dangerous because he knows Ahsoka. But also Oddball. Oddball has fought with Anakin before, and he's one of the pilots, and he's never fought with Ahsoka before, but he has fought with Anakin. So it was nice that he was, like, you know, feeding Anakin that information, but he's also the one that's going, aha, we got you now, Jedi, and I was like, oh, this is rough to watch, it's good. It makes me squeamish that my clone babies are being, like, ugh, ugh. Oh my god, okay, so I have to talk about some feelings now, because my last two notes are all Anakin and Ahsoka feelings. Anakin's line, I would never let anyone try to hurt you, Ahsoka, that line has been used by so many fans, to make just heartbreaking artwork and gift sets of that line beside Vader fighting Ahsoka in Rebels, because the only person who tries to hurt Ahsoka later is, in fact, Anakin, and that just me cry.
And they didn't even know it was gonna happen when they were writing this.
Yeah, the only person that will actually ever try to hurt Ahsoka is in fact Anakin, which just when he said that line I was just like, oh, my Rebels feeling.
Yeah, well, Anakin's one of those guys who gets to he says a lot of things too, so he gets to say a lot of ironic things before he turns into Darth Vader.
Like last week, and he was like, yeah, sometimes Jedi's just turn, it happens, and you're like, hey. You're gonna be Vader in a year. One year for
you
right
don't
now,
say.
Darth Vader. Call me Captain Hindsight, Anakin Skywalker. Okay, I'm gonna ramble for a second. Here we go. The entire end conversation with Anakin and Ahsoka is just so good. I could have watched that scene way longer, too. I wish it was a touch longer, and I wish it wasn't right at the end of the episode, and they just gave it, like, another, like, 30 seconds of dialogue. Because there's just so much going on in that scene. Because Ahsoka is panicking and thinks Anakin didn't want to help her, and he does want to help her, but now she can't trust him, and he has to, for once, let go of his power over her and let her go, which is something we've already seen before that Anakin struggles with. And there's just so much of the previous five seasons of them, especially from the last episode, because last episode was all Anakin and Ahsoka, and it was reminding us of their relationship, and it gets us to this moment, and it shows us their friendship and how they banter and how they fight together, just to get us to this moment right here at the end where their entire friendship is just breaking down, and we know as fans, like, it's some kind of an ending, and we're not sure I've seen the episode, so I know what happens, but, like, at this moment, if you're watching this for the first time, and you didn't know the future, we don't know what kind of ending is happening, so it's just so good, because they've just spent, especially last episode, they spent the entire episode being like, man, Anakin and Ahsoka are such great friends. Look at them bantering, and they're working together, and they're such a good team. And now we're here, and she doesn't trust him, and he's begging her to come back, and she's like, no, and his heart is breaking, and her heart is breaking, and he has to let her go, and then she dumps him, he's like, ah! Oh my god, it's good.
It's different from The Fugitive. In The Fugitive, you know, the Tommy Lee Jones is just the guy who's chasing after him, so he's out to get him, and when he jumps out from the pipe, he's jumping off a dam. And Tommy Lee Jones thinks he might as well just be jumping to his death, you know? Mm-hmm. In this one, I think you see Anakin thinking to himself what he would do if he was in Ahsoka's shoes, and he would probably do the same thing. Because when she jumps, I mean, they're Jedi. They can make that a jump. She could have just jumped down in that hole and stopped herself near the bottom or whatever, or maneuvered herself into the side of it or whatever. He could have totally followed her. He didn't have to. He didn't have to let her go. She didn't get away from him. He let her go. If she could make that jump, he could make that jump. You know, so
twice as high.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, he was like, okay, I'm gonna. You know, here's your chance to escape. But he's, you know, but I'm gonna have to take you in if you don't stay. You know, stay sharp.
But Matt Lantern and Ashley X. Dine's acting is just so good, because like whenever Ahsoka's like screams, like her voice is breaking, and he is just how he goes from like snip, so be fine, to put down your lightsaber now, girl. Like, it's a wide range from the two of them. It's
well,
just
they made sure to remind us at the beginning, you know, that she's still just a kid.
Yeah, she wanted to go off with her friend and be with her friend, and also just last episode, man, that was. We were talking last week about, like, it's so nice that Anakin and Ahsoka are having this opening battle together, and look how great it is, and it's just, like, five seasons, and they're finally together again, and then you get to this episode, and you're just like, oh,
well, she's learned the truth about war, and then she learned the truth about politics, and now both of those things are, like, intruding upon the Jedi, so everything is just sort of, like, falling apart for
them. But that's all I have for this amazing episode.
You ready?
Did you have anything else?
Score it up.
Yeah, did you have anything else?
Nope, that's all I got.
All right, score it up, Chris.
All right. This, I really like this episode a lot. I'm giving it a 9. I loved it. I still think the last one might have been the best political episode, but this is something beyond a political episode. This is getting more Star Wars. You know, this is one of the better ones that's tied, you know, deeply into the larger storyline, and it's really good. It's really well written and plotted, and it's not just sort of a cheesy take on a Hitchcock film. It's more following some of the darker themes of Hitchcock. So I loved it. 9 out of 10.
For me, this episode is just so good, and there's so many layers to it. There's just all the Imperial nods starting off, and like we're getting closer and closer to the original trilogy. Farkin is taking command, and like we're seeing who he's eventually going to become. Ahsoka and Anakin are just so emotional at the end. And it's also cool that we get to see different kinds of clones under different commands and how they act. And these clones are just different because they're military clones, not
Jedi. We're seeing, like, these little cancers that have been growing while we've been paying attention to the other stuff.
Yeah, and, like, here they are. Here's all the cancer that has been just off-screen. And it's just setting up for a big end. And there's just so much good stuff in this episode and this one. So I also gave it a 9 out of 10.
Ooh.
I was sitting here going, like, I was going to score an 8.5 because I know what's coming. And I know what's going to happen. I knew my score was going to go up, but I was like, no, man, fucking 9. I was going to do like an 8.75, and I was like, no, fucking 9. Farkin 9. 9 Farkins Farkin. 9 Farkins Farkin. 8 Anakin's crying. 7 Ahsoka's jumping. 5 Golden Rexes. Oh, well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback on iTunes, Twitter, or on the Two True Freaks Facebook page, especially on iTunes, because when you rate and review your show, even if you just don't want to leave a review, if you go and just give us a little star, like star us up, it helps people find our show. But this week, our feedback comes from the Two True Facebook page for our episode, the 100th episode of Clone Wars, Missing in Action. Take it away, Chris.
All right, our first one is from Aaron Henley, and he says, I feel that should be the episode title for my lack of... Yeah, I feel like that should be the episode title for my lack of posting lately.
Can I just say that, like, people have lives and it's totally okay and stuff like that? Like, yeah, we read people's feedback and stuff like that, but it's like, we also understand that people have lives, so it's totally fine, Aaron. You're good.
Well, you got one in anyway.
Yeah.
All right, and we got one from Paul C. Kelly.
Oh, yeah.
This is where the arc should have ended, for sure. I like the color of Gregor's J-Guys, LOL. Good detail of the dirt on his suit, almost like the clone risen from the dead.
Brush that off, bro, like Luke Skywalker, brush.
Gregor did not find out he was a clone. He could still have done well. Garage sale, gloating, and podcasting. Oh my God. Crossover.
I would totally listen to Gregor's podcast and D-Rally reference.
Looking forward to the return of more adventures in that podcast, by the way. Oh, yeah, so am I. I'm hoping this weekend will be my first garage sale outing. They're saying rain this weekend, though, but it's only Monday, so that could change by then. So I'm crossing my fingers. I've listened to all the Gloatmobile escapades now. Well, there's more coming. You got the summer season about to start. Listening to that in my car made for an interesting drive. I like the music in this episode. Hints at the clone theme when Gregor talks.
His voice is like music.
John Williams seemed to simply revive a lot of old trilogy and prequel themes in certain moments of The Last Jedi. Like Luke and Leia's theme from Return of the Jedi. And he even swiped the whole Ben's death and TIE fighter attack. Will we ever leave this arc? Light at the end of the tunnel.
You're almost there.
Yep, you're so close.
Actually, by now, they're done with that arc, so we've already moved on to the Mandalore arc in our podcast, so. All
right, once again.
We didn't choose our candy beforehand.
We were so excited about this episode, we did not pick our candy, and oh my God, what a selection we have to choose from.
What's that, Chiquito? A Chocito?
What does it look like?
It's like yellow and red striped.
Yellow and red striped. Oh, Chocito. Nestle Chocito.
And it's from Brazil.
Peso Neto.
If you don't know, Chris hates American Kit Kats. And so our friend Dario, who is Chris's co-podcaster for Eat It and Beat It, sends us candy from all over the world to review, and today we're doing the Chocito. I don't know how to say it. But thank you,
I'm going to call it the Force Chocito.
The Force Chocito!
But I like the packaging of this. You notice it has some slack in it, so you can almost like take the top and like sort of twist it up a little bit. I don't know. I just like it. It's like it's in its own little sack. Okay, I have no idea what to expect from the Chocito. It looks like it's a lumpy thing.
There's like bubbles on the package. Listen, like... package, you need to stop sticking to this. I would like to eat this now.
Yeah, this package wants to just sort of...
Stick to it.
Oh.
Oh, man.
Okay, it looks like a turd. Looks like a lumpy turd.
There's like nougat and crunchy bits inside.
Okay. It's sort of like a Twix with...
But instead of cookie, it's like Krispies.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of caramel, it's like nougat.
There used to be a candy bar. Maybe there still is. It's almost the same thing as this. It's almost like a Little Debbie Star Crunch.
That's delicious.
Oh, it's got nougat.
Thank you, Dario.
This is good.
Well, that's all I have. Where can people find you, Chris?
You can find me at 22freaks.com, where I've been plotting some summer through fall escapades with Patrick Delmore. You may be hearing some of that, and his other podcast. There might be some crossover adventure happening this year. So as that develops, there'll be further news on that. And twotruefreaks.com has all our podcasts on it. You can see a list of them and then go and look at all the podcasts that are in that list, which will take you days and days and days and days
weeks
to do. Weeks and months of poring over podcasts. You don't even have to keep up with what we're doing now. You could spend years catching up to us. So you can also go to Facebook, where we have a Two True Freaks page, and we have a Two True Freaks Cantina page.
Cantina.
Just some. Speaking of that little burst of Star Wars music, some good news. I just recently, with Scott McGregor and his girlfriend, we just all bought tickets to see Star Wars: Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi. With our local symphony orchestra playing all the music.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
Yeah, it does. The first
I
one.
I still need to get my tickets for Solo.
They've been doing stuff like that. They had one for Raiders of the Lost Ark, and they had one for E.T. E.T. I would have loved to see. Tickets were like $150 to see the E.T. performance, and I understood that because they got to learn 2 hours of score, you know? Those John Williams movies have score through every music through the whole movie. And it must be a tough job to learn that. But this one, since there's three of them, and they're happening each movie is 6 months apart. And they had special rates for them, and I think it costs less than $120 for all three. And we went for the cheap seat tickets, and the first one we didn't even get cheap seats. They put us down in the orchestra for Star Wars, so we're gonna be right down there in the orchestra for Star Wars, and oh boy. I'm as excited as for any rock concert that I've ever been to.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. You'll hear about it soon. You'll hear about it in the coming months. You'll hear about Star Wars at least in the coming months, and then Empire's happening in January, and then Jedi's next June. So it's over a year from now. We also have a Twitter page, Two True Freaks at Twitter, and that is run by Gene, the podcasting machine.
Gene, I panicked.
I don't know why you should be surprised by now, but that's okay.
I was like, what am I going to say? Okay. I don't know. I panicked because I was like, we need to do this differently. And I was like, Gene.
It's becoming like being John Malkovich. Everything will just be Gene upon Gene within Gene. Gene folded within himself. All right, I'm getting too weird. Where can people find you?
Geneception.
Geneception, exactly.
Well, you can find me.
Hendrickception.
What?
Hendrickception.
Yeah. You can find me at JGuys and Jedi. I run our Twitter accounts. You can also find me at Hope Molnax on Twitter. I'm also writing a fan fiction called Forces of Gravity. It is a Thrawn fan fiction. You can find that on Archive of Our Own or AO3. If you like it, you can leave a kudos or a comment. I love reading those and stuff like that. I'm also beta reading my best friend's story and helping her develop that too, and it's called Valkyrie Strike. My name on there is Chaos Lydia, and her name is Calypsan, and we're like co-writing both of our fics together. So, and she just posted chapter 2 today, and it's Rebel Thrawn. So we have, like, we're both writing Thrawn fanfictions because we're trash. So, yeah! Yeah! Well, that's all I have. Did you have anything else for this episode?
No, I cannot wait for the next episode.
If I remember if the next episode is what I think it is,
exciting is we're doing two. We're recording two next in our next thing, so we're finishing off this arc. So the next time
we're
sit down,
finishing off this season.
Oh God, yeah, that's right. Oh my God, Now I gotta start thinking about my season wrap-up. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, it'll be the week after next.
Well, this will be a fun season to talk about, so even with just what we watched so far, so...
Yeah, so it's gonna be a lot of fun. We're almost done with the season. I'm glad you reminded me. I forgot that we were doing two next week, so thanks for reminding me. Well, I guess until next time, better run. Gotta run. Gotta run.
But you can't hide.
I don't know what song we should put on the episode. And I'm singing, and this is awkward. And it's awkward. And bye.
Bye.
Jane, 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 Jane.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at twotruefreaks.com to shop there. If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled T-W-O. T-R-U-E-F-R-E-A-K-S.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
I got it in the tip of my tongue.
Come on.
Oh, golly, I'm nervous. Let me see. Oh, Alexander Dumbass. Oh, Henry Dumbass.